let's generate our motivation for listening. And with a kind and compassionate heart that wants to be a benefit to other living beings and to society in general, let's listen with an open mind and share some thoughts. Ding. Okay, so I thought I would pick up on what you said about attachment. Yeah. And to see how the harms that that attitude causes and how people get so super stuck in what they're attached to and what they want. Yeah. And attachment is a tricky one because on one hand, when we have it and we get what we want, we're happy. And we think, yippee, I got what I wanted. Yeah. But then when we lose it, then we're unhappy. When we don't get it to start with, it's we're unhappy. Yeah. When we compete with others to get it, we're not happy. So even though that little bit of a buzz when we get what we want seems to, that keeps us on the cycle, like the mice in the experiments. They get one grain of rice, so they keep tapping, even though no rice comes out, they're sure it's the next one is going to be it. And so we often do that with the things we're attached to. Yeah, we're trying to get them. Maybe we get a little bit, but it's not quite as good as we want. Yeah. And so we keep trying and trying and getting more and more frustrated. You know, attachment really, it breeds frustration when we can't get what we want. And I think we all know frustration quite well. Yeah. And, attachment's the source of all of that. Yeah. And you mentioned unrealistic expectations. That's another one. Yeah. Unrealistic expectations and attachment. They're kind of like a married couple, you know. They're together all the time, yeah. And so, you know, you have, yeah, I want this. I should get it. Yeah, this world should give it to me. I deserve it. And then the world doesn't give it to us, and we're angry, we're frustrated. We're in a bad mood, we take it out on other people. Right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's your fault because you do this and you should act like that. Yeah. And then, of course, we tell other people how they should change, how they can improve. And they don't listen to us. Yeah. You know that as a counselor. Yeah. You give your heart to give advice. And then people go, yeah. Okay. Bye. Yeah. And you just have to get used to that sometimes. Because sometimes you may have the expectation that they hear the advice and go, wow, the light bulb went off in my mind. Now I'm going to change. And they don't do that. So we're all bumping up against what we want and not getting what we want. Yeah. And this happens. It doesn't matter whether you are a family person, whether you're in a monastery. It's the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. maybe what we want is a little bit different, but yeah, not getting it is the same frustration. The unrealistic expectations is the same. Yeah, so there we are. And the point of this is that it all comes from our mind. It's not coming from outside. Yeah, and changing outside sometimes seems like it remedies the situation, but it doesn't really solve the problem because we're only more relaxed when we're getting what we want and as soon as it changes, or as soon as we decide to change our expectations. Okay, I got that. Now I want this. Now I want this. Yeah? So it's really a thing of looking inside and seeing our unrealistic expectations and how we impute on objects, people, situations that if only I had this, then I would be happy. Yeah? We all have our idea of, you know, the beautiful environment we would want, the kind of people we want in it, what's going on. Yeah. And somehow we never quite get it. And then it just reinforces our frustration and anger and discontent. Yeah. And, you know, we've tried forever to change other people and it's just not working. So the thing that we need to do is to change our expectations. Yeah, diminish the attachment that imputes happiness on things that we don't have, that they themselves don't have. For example, okay, let's say this is a mug made of gold. Let's pretend, okay. Oh, it's actually from San Francisco, the Golden Gate Bridge. Wow. And this cup made of gold was passed down in my family. And it's beautiful. Look at it. I want it. I want it. Because if I have this gold, this golden cup that I know my great, 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 great grandparents had, then I would feel, you know, I'd really be a representative of this family. And I'd have something beautiful that, you know, all my friends would look at and go, wow, where did you get this golden cup? You must be special. Yeah. Where they say, where can I get one too? And you say, oh, it's just one of a kind. And it's mine. Okay. So when we think, if I have this golden cup, I will be happy, it's as if we're seeing that inside this material object there is happiness. Is there happiness inside this object? Yeah, if you took it apart, is there a happiness molecule somewhere in it? Yeah. Is the happiness really in this? So it's like that with, you know, all the attachment. Somehow we're overestimating the happiness we're going to get from it. Yeah. And we're overestimating, and even if we get a lot of happiness from it, then it's a setup for being upset when we lose it, when it disappears. Yeah. You make a ton of money. Oh, good. Now I'm financially secure. Finally. Yeah. I have millions in the bank and stock. Everything's going really well. Then the stock market. Yeah. And what happens? Yeah. You still have the same stock. You haven't sold it. But now, where's the happiness that you thought was inside the stock? Did it have happiness in it? And then the happiness disappeared? Yeah. And what is stock to start with? I find this so interesting. Yeah. What is stock? When you say, I own stock, what do you have to prove that you own stock?
Certificate. Digital certificate.
Yeah. You don't even have the actual certificate.
Digital.
You have some digital representation from your stockbroker that says now in your account you have this. So what do you really have when you own stock? It's quite interesting, isn't it?
Happiness, no?
Huh?
Happiness.
Happiness?
Yeah.
Yeah? So the stock has happiness in it?
No, you see, it's like you want to stop. The stock goes up, they're happy. Of course, they come down, they're not happy. But the net is linked to your happiness, right? The cup couldn't cup to not have happiness molecule, but it makes you happy.
It makes me happy. How does it make me happy? How does the stock make you happy?
Well, you own a stock that is everybody talking about, and if the market, goes up, everybody is talking about it, goes up, it makes you happy.
Yeah. Just like but everybody's talking about it, so what? Everybody talks about something. It's only because people talk about it that it becomes valuable. If people didn't talk about it, it wouldn't be valuable.
Well, it's not really just about talking, right? Because the stock, if it goes up, you translate it into money, you can buy the things you want, you can do what you want.
Yeah, but you haven't sold the stock. It just went up. And you go, oh, I'm so happy. Then the next day it goes down. The stock, you still have that same piece of paper or the same digital thing that says you own so many shares of that stock. But what do you really have? This is a really interesting question to think about. You know?
No, it's true. Yes. But at the point of time, I'm happy.
Yeah.
So I'm happy. So the question now is, what is happiness?
Yeah. Why are you happy? Because you have a digital thing that isn't even on your phone all the time. It's only on the phone when you look it up and click the right things. Why do you get happy at that?
Of the value that has been built.
Yeah, but where's that value coming from? Is it coming from the stock or is it coming from your mind?
I think it gives a sense of financial security, and that security leads to happiness.
But where does the sense of financial security come from?
From the stock.
How we feel.
But it comes, the feeling of security comes from in here, doesn't it?
Yes.
The stock does not give it to us.
It has a value that is perceived.
Yeah.
Right? That's the value that's built up.
Yeah, but that value, what in the world is that value? It's just something that all of us have agreed to give meaning to. In and of itself, it's like when you get money, let's take it away from stock. You have money, you have bills, you're holding them in your hand. Those bills, we say, oh, now I have financial security. Look, I have all this money and I can open my drawers and suitcases and filled with money. I'm so happy. That money only has value because our minds give it value. The money itself is paper and ink, And if you were stranded on a desert island with no toilet paper, that money would be valuable to use as toilet paper. Yeah? All the other worth means nothing because there's no society, no people around that say, oh, that piece of paper with that ink designed in a certain manner means that I can get the stuff I want.
Remember, how about this? The stockholder, you keep on asking, you know, where is the happiness? The stockholder is able to cash out the stock, get the cash,
yeah,
when it is needed. For example, the stockholder falls very sick, needs medical treatment. Okay, yeah. So the stock can be converted to cash to pay for medical treatment. So yeah. The peace of mind.
Even if you bought the stock for 100 and now it's worth 10, yeah, you can still cash it out for your medical.
Yes.
I see, even though you lost 90 on
it. Yes, because one thing is that even if it's 10, you lost 90, if there's enough to pay for medical treatment, especially if it is a fatal one,
yeah,
whether it is worth 100, 200, or 10, that maybe not so important. Get well first.
But when it was at this, when you could sell it up here, you only had to sell a few stock to get your treatment. When it's down at 10, you sell the whole lot and you don't even have enough money.
Yeah. So the alternative is that if there is no means for medical treatment, then, you know, very sick, even if appreciated by 1,000 times, it doesn't make a difference to the person at that stage.
Yeah, because...
But if they have the means to get the treatment, then at least there's a fighting chance.
Okay, so if the money, those pieces of paper, that stock is practical for exchanging, but again, only because our society agrees. Yeah? It's only because we agree that that has value. And if people, as soon as people stop agreeing, then the value goes down.
Sure. Yes.
Somebody only has an elected position because other people elected them. Only people, somebody becomes the CEO only because other people say, okay, that's the CEO. There's no inherent status in being a CEO.
Yeah.
What it basically means, primary job description of a CEO is that you are the final person that everybody blames and complains to. That's the happiness you get. Yeah, we think, oh, I want to be a CEO. Then people respect me. They will do what I say. I will be happy. I will have a corner office. Then I could be like Donald Trump and decorated in gold everywhere around, and everybody would know how important I am. What is that? What is that importance? What is that happiness? It's just coming because our minds say, oh, you must be happy if you're CEO. But you're not happy as a CEO. Yeah? It's a rough position. People blame you. People criticize you. Yeah? People are very insincere around you because they're trying to win your favor. But you say, oh, I'm happy because I'm a CEO. Well, first of all, you're only a CEO because people agreed.
So the Bible, the coming back to what King Wah just talked about, yes, it is a agreement amongst the people in the ecosystem, and that's true, even for the CEO example. Yes. It's an agreement amongst the different points.
But it's not in the object itself. That's my point.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not in the object itself. Because, you know, you may have stock that really went up. You're happy. I go, so what? Yeah? So what? You have stock that went
up. So you're happy so because it, in your mind, it translates into you are able to do a lot more things.
Right, but that's all in our mind.
But practically, you can do more things if the stock goes up.
Yeah. If you sell it when it's up. But sometimes you wait for it to go up even further and it goes down. Yeah? So my point here is, you know, to really look at what makes us happy, and is the happiness coming from the outside object or situation in and of itself, or does the happiness come from our mind or from the agreement of many people? Yeah, but it doesn't come actually from the object. Okay, because if the stock itself gave happiness, okay, so we have a monastery. We depend on donations. So let's say somebody writes and says, I'm going to send you 1 million shares of, what's a big stock?
Nvidia.
Okay. I'm going to donate 1 million.
My wealth.
I'm going to send you 1 million shares of Nvidia. Yeah. And I go, wow, hey, look. We can build the Buddha Hall. We can get some statues. But actually, I don't know. We have enough. We have a Buddha Hall. We have statues. Yeah. And then the next day the person calls and says, oh, I'm very sorry. My family just had an emergency. I'm not going to donate 1 million shares of NVIDIA to you. Yeah? So it looked like one day we had it, even though we didn't. Our moon. Next day, yeah, we didn't have it. Yeah.
So, Venerable, in this situation, if I might ask, what would be the appropriate thing to do or action to take when this opportunity arises? In other words, a donor says, I'd like to donate 1 million shares to the Abbey. Then what would be the kind of response that would be
inappropriate?
How would Buddha, in the sense that look, avoid this ups and downs of happiness, suffering.
Okay. What I do, if we get donations, I think to myself, that other person is creating merit by practicing generosity. That makes me happy. I rejoice at their merit. I rejoice at their goodness, that they want to share what they have. And that makes me happy.
Okay.
So practice of gratitude?
Yeah. Practice of gratitude.
And when that's no longer available, then what's the response?
You mean they don't? They change their mind? They don't give me anything?
Yeah.
Then I sue them. Then I say, come, come, go, go. Because everything we have, you know, this is something my teacher used to say, come, come, go, go. Everything we have we're gonna separate from. Whether it's material things, whether it's people, even our own body we're gonna separate from.
Yeah. So would it be venerable, back to the example of owning the stocks, to take a similar kind of approach, which is to say, look, you know, I'm grateful and I rejoice in the...
You're grateful to all those who sold and you bought.
You what?
We're grateful that those who sold created the merits because you bought them.
Okay, so that's one version. There are many versions of truth, right? Depending on how you see it. But I cannot, you know, one can take the same position. Okay, I'm grateful, I rejoice at this opportunity of having enough earning to be able to buy the shares. Okay, and when the time comes, it 10 to 10% or zero. Okay, take it easy.
Come, come, go, go.
Okay.
It's interesting, you have the money to buy the shares. Where does the money come from?
Work.
Who gave you the money?
The people who needed me to work for them.
Yeah. So, who's the real source of your wealth? The people who gave you the money.
Yes.
You know? Yeah.
Yes.
No, yeah. The real source of the wealth was me because I worked to get the money.
Oh, but what happens if you hate your job? Then
I enjoy another company.
Yeah. What happens if you don't like your job? You know? So, I mean, even you get money. When we were born totally broke.
Yeah, correct.
Totally broke. Every bit of money we have was given to us by other people.
Yes.
Now you might say, but I earned it, I went to work. Well, you provided a service. You know, why are you going to work? Is it just going to get money? Or is it to contribute your skill to society?
A lot of people work to get money.
Yeah. And then they get the stock and the stock goes down and, you know, they get what they want. What was it I just read? Some people in California were going on a short cruise to Mexico. Yeah. Yippee, we have enough money to go on a cruise. You know, this is like people like that, go on a cruise boat. Yeah. So they're on the cruise, and the cabin wasn't ready, so the wife goes to look and see if the cabin, you know, what, check up. The husband, you know, they put them in the dining room bar, and the husband starts drinking, and he had purchased a thing, you know, for people where you can get all the drinks you want. He drank. He had 33 drinks. He started behaving crazy. People had to tie him and sit on him and everything because he was just totally out of his mind. And he wound up dying. Okay. Now here, this cruise is, whee! We're going to have such a good time on the cruise. And, you know, from the money, and you wind up with this. You know, where does the happiness of going on a cruise come from? Yeah? Maybe the other people are on the cruise are happy. Yeah? But you're miserable. But everybody's still on the cruise. They didn't turn around and go back to the port.
Yeah.
they just put the body in. They have a morgue on the cruise ship, I guess, in case of emergency. And the body stayed in there until they got to their destination. Yeah? So you have, what I'm getting at is, you know, in placing our happiness on external things, yeah, that don't really have happiness inside them, yeah, then we're putting ourselves at the mercy of changeable circumstances. And as we know, things change all the time, don't they? Yeah, things change all the time. And we can't predict the change, we can't control the change. Yeah, but when we're attached to some outcome and think that getting that will make us happy, yeah, it's not that thing that gives us the happiness. Yeah, because if it did, we would still be happy. So what we're doing in Buddhist practice, in one way, is analyzing, you know, what is happiness and what gives us happiness, and then shifting our mind so that we can rejoice and at other things, things that we used to take for granted, maybe, or even things that happen to other people, yeah? We rejoice when we have a good opportunity, but when other people have that opportunity, we're jealous. Yeah, but if we, what about if we can switch our mind to rejoice, oh, somebody else has that opportunity, that's really good. Okay, let me give you an example of learning to rejoice at others, at the things others get. Okay, when I ordained, you know, I'm ordained in the Tibetan tradition, I really wanted to learn Tibetan language, and that would have been so helpful to learn Tibetan language, yeah. And I tried, but when I had a teacher who was, I think he was like 12 years old, teaching us the alphabet, ka, 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 ka. You know, then I had a visa. But when I lost the visa, yeah, then I lost the teacher, then I went somewhere else, I got another teacher, but then I got sick. Yeah. So it became very difficult for me to learn Tibetan. Meanwhile, two of my friends were in different situations. They came out speaking perfect Tibetan. Yeah. Brilliant. They could read the text. They could, you know, translate orally. They could translate the text. And I was like, oh, you know, we've been ordained. Even one of them, I was ordained longer than her. And she was fluent in Tibetan, you know. And I had to ask her to translate for me. But I had excuses why I didn't learn. No visa, no teacher, bad health. You know, I had lots of reasons why I couldn't learn. Good reasons. And I was miserable. Yeah, I was miserable. And then, yeah, then one day, you know, I was practicing this thing about rejoicing. And I thought, okay, what happens if I rejoice that they know Tibetan? What happens if I rejoice that they're better than me? And I started practicing like that, and I am really happy. Yeah, because now they're doing the translations, and I use the material that they translate to do the things that I want to do, yeah? And I'm glad they're better than me, and I'm glad that, you know, they were had the excellent opportunities to develop that quality, yeah? And when I changed my own mind like that, then I was happy at other people's happiness. But when I just thought of myself, yeah, then I was totally miserable and jealous.
So, Venerable, in other words, what I'm taking away is that happiness is within ourselves.
Yeah.
But I always find it's how do you actually sustain that happiness within yourself? And what you just described is how you express gratitude and rejoice for others. And that's how you then keep that fire going within you in terms of the happiness.
Right. And the change of the mindset.
Yeah, the change of my mindset. I'm happy they have good qualities. I happy when the people donate, I rejoice at their merit. Yeah? I get money, but they get the merit. Merit is actually much more valuable than money. Yeah? You can't see the merit. Yeah? You don't get certificates. You don't get gold stars. You don't get, you know, paper with printing on it. Yeah? You can't even use it as toilet paper on a desert or island. But if, you know, you practice virtuous actions, then you have a certain kind of contentment and happiness in your life. And when you die, you don't have any regrets. Yeah. If the meaning of your life is the amount of money, yeah, then it becomes difficult. Yeah. There's a text by Nagarjuna called Precious Garland. And I worked on my teacher's commentary to it. It's published as a book, Practical Ethics and Profound Emptiness. Yeah. And the king was asking Nagarjuna, who was a Buddhist sage, for advice. And the king's getting older. He has a treasury full of stuff. Yeah, the people on the land don't have nearly as much. Yeah, think Donald Trump in America. And it's amazing how similar it is. Anyway, okay. So the king says, give me advice to Nagarjuna. You're a sage. Give me advice. And Nagarjuna says to him, you know, you have all this wealth in your treasury. Yeah. When you die, your children and your ministers are all going to fight over it. You can't take it with you. It's not going to do you any good. No matter how much money from the bank of hell they burn, you're not going to get it. Yeah. But if you do things for your subjects and you take care of your subjects, you use the money for, you know, to improve society, you give the money to different people, you know, especially the impoverished, then you're going to have a feeling of goodness in your own heart, a feeling of satisfaction that comes from helping other people. And that you'll have the rest of your life. And when you die, you'll still have that satisfaction of your life having been meaningful because you contributed to the benefit of others. Yeah? So that happiness comes in your own mind when you learn to rejoice, when you learn to feel grateful, when you learn to look at others and rejoice when others have good opportunities and success. In other words, when you stop being so self-centered. Yeah?
Because should we pause and take the lunch? Because I think Venerable may be hungry. And then we could do some more Q&A.
Okay. Yeah, now is lunch for us happy?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Really? It's in those noodles? I can see happiness crawling out of those noodles to me.